Warning, the following podcast may discuss topics of violence that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Imagine for a second that you are a soldier in the United States Army serving during the American Civil War. You and your men recently ordered to charge a heavily defended position atop Maurice Heights, just outside the town of Fredericksburg, Maryland. While charging up the hill, you watch as your friends and brothers-in-arms fall to your left and right, and you fear that you may be next. You finally take position near the bodies of the hundreds of others of men who have been sent to the same fate as yourself, and you return fire on the Confederate troops. In front of you, the most you can see of the enemy is half a second or so that they pop their heads over the wall just to hurl hot lead directly at you and your men. Just when it seems that your attack has failed, and you have been ordered to retreat, you feel a sharp, thunderous pain in your chest. While attempting to fall back with the rest of your unit, a bullet strikes you just below your collarbone and you fall. You are lying helplessly on the ground as you see the blue line of your fellow soldiers get further and further out of view before disappearing altogether. You are now left to the mercy of the enemy. Hours pass as you feel yourself drifting in and out of consciousness. You think of your family, your friends, anything but the hell you were in as you listen to the cries and moans of the other men who fell around you. You wish the pain would end. You wish that someone could help you. But remembering the sight of the Federal line leaving your view earlier in the day, you know that it is a futile thought. But then, you hear someone running towards you, and for a split second, you have hope. But that hope quickly fades and turns to fear as you tell it is a gray uniform running to you, and you are trying to gather the strength to fight off the attacker, but the enemy hushes you and tells you that he won't hurt you. Instead of a weapon in his hand, you see that he has a dozen or so canteens around him. You thank him as he gives you a sip of water, and you watch as he moves on to the next wounded man near you. The man who went around for hours and gave water to wounded Federal soldiers was 19-year-old Confederate Richard Kirkland, and tonight we go into the life of the man more commonly referred to as the Angel of Maurice Heights. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Above and Beyond. As always, I'm your host, Philip Kesterson, and tonight I have a great episode lined up for you guys because we will talk about one of my favorite people in American history. His name is Richard Rowland Kirkland. Now, off the top of my head, I don't think I have any housekeeping things, so we're just going to jump straight into this episode. To start, the American Civil War lasted from 1861 to 1865 and ultimately led to the deaths of around 600,000 people as the country tore itself apart. Now, wars are largely expected to be fought between two nations who may have differing religions, different languages, different wealth, or even just over who wants a certain area more. However, the American Civil War pitted brother against brother, neighbor against neighbor, and sometimes even father against son. The war was fought between 20 Union states and 11 Confederate states, and is the bloodiest conflict in American history. How is it that these men who grew up together, who went to school together, lived in the same town, probably went to the same churches together, could turn their weapons on each other in such a split second? The ferocity shown during the war is forever etched into the history books, as we all know of the names of some of the most destructive battles in U.S. history. The Battle of Spotsylvania Courthouse in May of 1864 gave us one of the bloodiest single incidents of the war, as blue and gray soldiers fought for almost 24 straight hours in hand-to-hand combat. The Battle of Antietam in September of 1862 gave us the single bloodiest day of the war, and one of the single bloodiest days in U.S. history. And of course, the Battle of Gettysburg in July of 1863 gave us the bloodiest battle in all of American history, with around 75,000 casualties. Another grand battle of the war is one that does not get as much attention as it should. I am, of course, referring to the Battle of Fredericksburg. Fought from December 11th to December 15th of 1862, this battle was a colossal failure for the Union Army and provided absolutely no backup for the American President Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation issued back in September of 1862. This proclamation was the first step to ending slavery in the United States, as it freed all the slaves in the southern states, and the loss of Fredericksburg hurt the document, and it would lose traction until the federal victory at the Battle of Stones River in Middle Tennessee just a few weeks later. So what exactly was special at Fredericksburg? Well, I'm going to tell you right here. This battle was a lot of military first for U.S. history. For example, this would be the first time that a U.S. force would cross a body of water while under fire. Now, it's easy to immediately think of D-Day in 1944, when American, British, Canadian forces crossed the English Channel to liberate Normandy and all of France. Or you can even think of when the U.S. Marines during World War II were island hopping all over the Pacific. Every time they'd land on a new island, they would come under fire by enemies. But the first time that an American military force would cross a body of water while under fire was right here at the Battle of Fredericksburg in December of 1862. This would happen as federal engineers who were tasked with building a pontoon bridge across the Rappahannock River so federal troops could move into the town came under heavy fire by Mississippian sharpshooters under General Barksdale. Now, the response to this was to send infantry across the river in small boats to silence the Confederate rifles. The infantry that had this unfortunate task of rowing about 350 or so yards across the Rappahannock did so all while being shot at with fierce accuracy. Now, when these men got across the river, they were given the Black Flag Order, which meant that they did not have to take prisoners if they wanted to. Now, if you just rowed across this 350 yards of this river and you were under fire the whole time and your friends had been shot at, you definitely would be wanting this Black Flag Order because you were probably not going to be showing much mercy to your enemy. Now, when these men finally crossed the Rappahannock and pushed the Confederate sharpshooters from their position, they would endure another military first as they would engage in what would today be called urban warfare. The traditional fighting style of lines of infantry moving across an area had to be shelved as federal troops had to go street to street and building to building to weed out Confederates who were covering the main retreat of the Confederate Army to the heights surrounding the town. Now, the main interest of this battle and the topic of tonight's episode is Richard Rowland Kirkland, the man who put his life on the line to help fallen soldiers. But before we get into that, I'm going to pause right here for a word from our sponsor. Now, Richard Rowland Kirkland was the sixth of seven children born to John Kirkland and Mary Vaughn in August of 1843. Born near Camden, South Carolina, when the state seceded from the Union in December of 1860, it was clear that Kirkland would soon enlist to fight in the war. Unfortunately, not too much is known about Kirkland's life before the war, but given that what he did specifically during the Battle of Fredericksburg is so significant, the type of man he was before it speaks for itself. Now, South Carolina was the first state to secede from the Union, and over the course of the next half a year, 10 more states would follow suit. Like a majority of other Southern men who took up arms against the United States, Kirkland did not come from a family that owned many, if any, slaves at all. He simply wanted to fight for his home state as he felt that the U.S. government was overstepping its reach. Now, he had originally enlisted as a private in the Camden Volunteers, but due to logistic reasons, the Camden Volunteers were folded into the 2nd South Carolina Infantry, and Kirkland was made a sergeant. Now, by December of 1862, the Union Army had itself a new commander, and this was a man by the name of General Ambrose Burnside. He was placed in charge of the Army of the Potomac, which was one of two major armies that the Union had. He was made command about a month prior to the battle after President Abraham Lincoln's patience wore out with the previous commander, a man named George B. McClellan, due to his inability to pursue and destroy the Confederate Army following the Northern victory at Antietam the previous September. General Burnside was reluctant to take command of the Army as he genuinely did not believe he was the right man for the job. Now, I personally do not like General Burnside. I think leading up to the Battle of Fredericksburg, how he handled the positioning of men and it's easy to be an armchair historian 150 years later. Like, I'm just going to throw that out there right there. I'm not saying, well, I could have done it better, because I couldn't have. I couldn't have. I mean, at the end of the day, I couldn't. Fredericksburg was doomed from the start. That being said, General Burnside, I got to give him credit where credit is due. I don't like the man, but the fact that he genuinely did not want to be in command. He was supposed to be in command of the Army of the Potomac prior to the Battle of Antietam. But he was like, no, my past campaigns have failed. He's like, McClellan can do it, let him do it. But then McClellan goofed. So then Burnside really didn't have a choice but to take command. Now, this factor led him to strike fast and soon to attempt to earn the name of Commander of the Army of the Potomac, because as I just said, he really didn't feel like he was able to do it. The American Civil War is a really unique war in the scopes of history, and this is because this war was the first one that was really, like, printed in the media. The Battle of Antietam in September of 1862, this was the first time that images of war were printed in newspapers. And because of this, there was a lot of pressure on Union commanders, and it was one of the reasons that they cycled through them so fast, is because Union commanders weren't necessarily just fighting the Confederate Army. They were also fighting the newspapers, because whatever the newspaper said is basically all that the civilian population had to go on for the war. So if they're saying, oh, the Union Army is failing because General so-and-so won't do anything, then it makes that general look bad, but it may not always be the truth. Now, pressure like this, and pressure from Abraham Lincoln, led Burnside to believe that he needed to attack fast and soon, and this led him to order an attack on the town of Fredericksburg, Virginia, way before he even had the men to launch it. And this was immediately after watching the Confederate Army evacuate most of the town, and then go up in the heights and then defend, like dig in and create a formidable defensive position. Now, once the Federal Army had successfully, albeit not at the expense of precious time and American lives, captured the town, they aimed to drive the Confederates from the area. Now, this meant that the Federal troops would have to charge up Marye's Heights, just outside of town, and force the rebels from it. The main issue with Marye's Heights and why it has permanently held its spot in American history books is that the Confederate position on top of this hill was extremely well-defended position, and it's a defensive position that would overshadow any other position that the Confederates held in the entirety of the war. Now, what I mean by this is that it was the single strongest position they ever held. They had a stone wall on top of a hill that had a line of infantry behind it, and behind that, further up the hill, was a line of artillery. Now, this meant that the infantry could fire on Federal forces advancing, but Confederate artillery could also shoot over the heads of their own infantry and shoot straight to the faces of the Federals who were charging. Now, this was a challenging feat that would not be successful without thousands of casualties, and both sides knew this. And I will say it is challenging, but I will not say that it is impossible, because it was this exact same hill where the Federal forces would break the Confederate line during the Second Battle of Fredericksburg, about 5 months after the first battle in May of 1863. Now, however challenging it may be, the Federals were forced to charge this Confederate position. And what followed was pure bloodshed, as the dug-in rebel troops made the advancing Federals pay for every single inch that they gained. By the end of the night, around 8,000 bodies would litter the slopes of Marye's Heights, all dressed in blue uniforms. Like, the ratio to what the Federals suffered, the casualties that the Federals suffered, and the casualties that the Rebels suffered, is ridiculous. And wave after wave of Federal troops were sent up this hill, and every one of them failed. And what men who were not shot down or had successfully retreated back, they were trapped on the slopes of Marye's Heights. And if they tried to fall back, they are shot. If they tried to move forward, they are shot. They are trapped on this hill. Now, for hours, the Federals who were trapped here on the slope and the Confederates who were looking down at them had to listen to the screams of the wounded. Some were calling out for water, some would be calling out for their mothers, but every single one of them were calling out for some kind of help. Now, if you were one of the Confederates looking down on this hill listening to this, it is chilling. And if you were one of the unfortunate Union soldiers right in the middle of it, it's got to be demoralizing. To sit there and listen to men who charged with you, or charged before you, or even after you, to hear them screaming for their mothers, hear them screaming for water, hear them screaming for help, it makes you wonder why you charged in the first place. But these men were just following orders when they charged. Now finally, after hours of listening to it, a sight that is completely unexpected happens. Now the Federal troops were trapped on the slope, had to watch as a lone Confederate soldier hops the wall and begins to move towards the fallen Federal troops. Now, it's important to note here that it was not uncommon, and this isn't just the American Civil War, this is all wars. It is not uncommon for soldiers to rifle through the pockets or the bags or whatever of fallen troops. They're looking for money, they're looking for clothing items, like anything that they can take. And for the most part, that's what the Federals thought that this lone Confederate was doing. Some of them shot at him, and others just kind of watched to see what he was doing. And it's like, they were probably sitting there thinking, what the hell is this guy doing? Like, he's not charging us. He can't be thinking he's going to launch a surprise attack on all of us down here. He must be robbing them. But what they saw was that this man was going up to all the wounded soldiers, and he wasn't robbing them, but he was giving them water. In some cases, he was even seen to be praying with some of the dying. And when the Federals realized what this Confederate was doing, they didn't shoot at him anymore. the man who did this was the 19-year-old Richard Kirkland. Now, Richard Kirkland hopped this wall armed with nothing but a bunch of canteens, like as many as he could carry, and he went from wounded enemy to wounded enemy, giving them water, giving them care, showing them that they weren't being ignored. And it's crazy that he does this, because these were men that a couple hours ago, him and his guys were shooting at them. Like, at some point, he had to think, I may have made you like this. Like, I may have made you fall on the ground like this with that bullet hole in you, but I'll be damned if I'm going to let you sit here and suffer from it, you know? In this one man, Richard Kirkland, he showed the true nature of humanity as he put his basic human need to help people and before his fear of being killed. And this act of selflessness and bravery shows us that just because you're on opposing sides does not mean that you must think of your enemy as anything less than human beings, because that's exactly what they are. Now, this is just an unfortunate example of one of the times that humanity is shown during wartime. And I say unfortunate because if people always acted as Kirkland did on that night, then there would be no more wars. There would be no more senseless killing, and men would be able to live their lives without the fear of fighting and dying, sometimes in countries that are thousands of miles away from them. Richard Kirkland embodies the compassion that most likely lingered in men on both sides of the war. If he didn't embody this, then he would have been shot dead that night. But the Federals, some of them didn't shoot at him, and others stopped shooting at him because they realized that he wasn't out to rob them. He wasn't out to kill them. He was helping them. What he did earned him the nickname of the Angel of Maurice Heights, and honestly, it is well earned. Like, he left his defended position in the middle of the night, most likely under fire, to give aid to enemies. You don't really see that in wartime much. It's incredible that he did this. Witnessing this act of mercy was most likely the only gratifying moment for the Federal troops, because their attack on the Heights and their overall presence in and around Fredericksburg was a tremendous failure and still looms today as one of the most catastrophic military failures in American history. Richard Kirkland would survive this battle. He would survive this battle. He would even go on to fight in both the battles of Chancellorsville and Gettysburg in May and July, respectively, of 1863. And he'd get promoted to lieutenant because of his actions. Like, he was a good soldier. He knew how to kill enemies. But obviously, he also knew how to care and how to show compassion and to show selflessness. Unfortunately, during the Battle of Chickamauga on September 20th, 1863, Kirkland and his men were charging a Federal position near Snodgrass Hill, and upon realizing that he had gotten too far ahead of the rest of his unit, he began to fall back, only he was struck with a bullet. Now, supposedly, and this comes from two men that tried to pull him back, his last words were, "I'm done for, save yourselves, and please tell my pa that I died right." It's a heartbreaking end to somebody who did something that is widely remembered as one of the most heartfelt acts of the entire war. Today, you can visit Kirkland's grave in the Old Quaker Cemetery in Camden, South Carolina, and if you happen to find yourself at the Fredericksburg battlefield in Maryland, you can visit a large monument that is dedicated to Richard Kirkland at the top of Maurice Heights, and it's a really cool monument. This is a battlefield that is very high on my list of places that I want to go. I just haven't had I've passed it a lot. I've just never got the chance to go to it. But this monument, it shows him giving water to a fallen enemy, and it's very sad that you see a moment like this in the middle of a war, in the middle of a battle where you're fighting your friends, you're fighting your brothers sometimes, or you're fighting your neighbors. And what's even more sad is sometimes these weren't just your brothers biologically, but these were sometimes your brothers in arms, as a lot of the guys who fought against each other in the American Civil War had fought side by side in the Mexican-American War just a few years prior to this. I read a quote one time towards the beginning of the American Civil War where the Union commanding officer of the entire forces was a guy named Winfield Scott, and he was talking to President Abraham Lincoln, and at one point, Abraham Lincoln said something like, "General Scott, how is it that in 1 year and with 10,000 men, you could take Mexico City, but now here we are 2 years into this conflict, and you now have 1 million men at your disposal, and you can't take Richmond, Virginia, which was the Confederate capital. And supposedly, Winfield Scott responded back with, "Well, Mr. Lincoln, the boys that took us into Mexico City are currently the ones that are keeping us out of Richmond." Like, it wasn't lost on any of these generals that they would probably be shooting at someone that was side by side with them in the past. It's heartbreaking. Like, civil wars in general, not just our civil war, but civil wars in general, are heartbreaking because you're fighting people that you know. You know, I often get asked why I predominantly cover American stories, and that is for a couple of different reasons. The first is, obviously, I'm an American, so I'm mildly biased towards our own military heroes. And the second reason is because I struggle to find non-American military stories in the sense of people who go above and beyond. I search far and wide to find these stories, but I often come up empty-handed. Therefore, if you know of any story that you would like for me to share with the world, please email me at above.beyondpodcast@gmail.com or just message me on the Facebook page at facebook.com/aboveandbeyond. I would love to do non-American stories as they are just as important. And I would even love to do like older stories, like ancient stories. But those are really hard to find, like really, really hard to find because there's not many of them that are recorded. You don't really hear of specific soldiers back in the day. But that is going to do it for this episode. I know this is a shorter episode, but Richard Kirkland is my go-to story whenever somebody asks me about like acts of bravery or acts of selflessness. His name is always the first one to appear in my head. And he is the embodiment of what it means to go above and beyond, because he did his duty for his nation that he fought for, but he also did his duty as a human by showing compassion and by going out and helping enemy soldiers, because that is human nature. Thank you all for listening, and I will see you next week on Above and Beyond.